Welcome to the Radio Detective Story Hour podcast. You can leave comments by going to the website at rdsh.otr.com or send me an email to otrpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to send me a tweet, my Twitter account is at Radio Detective, all one word.
People from talking, and they're talking, my dear, and the things they're saying fill my heart with fear. Now I could never believe them when they say you're untrue. I know that they're mistaken, still I want to hear it from you.
When one observes the history of detectives on radio, beginning from the late 20s to the early 30s, up through the 50s, one is struck by the primitive element of those early series. Obviously, as radio developed as a technology, so too the programming for it also advanced through more thorough plot lines, better sound effects, and more subtle acting. Even outside the detective genre, you can feel a sense of crudeness in series such as the earliest From the Shadow, Gangbusters, and others. In addition, some of the earliest detective serials on radio were born out of pulp stories from the earliest part of the 20th century, whether the pulp writers contributed to radio or scripters used the style of the pulps to create their storylines or characters. In the very early part of the 1930s, America, it seemed, was fascinated by crime stories, both real and fictional. Due to prohibition, gangs such as those of Al Capone or Dutch Schultz were born out of the restrictions of alcohol. Consequently, criminal activity was big news, and many Americans could not get enough when reading about them. Radio, too, saw this as a niche around which to create programming. This also gave rise to the hard-boiled aspects of many detectives. Yet some of the earliest detectives on radio had elements of the cozy about them, the stories often revolving around the elite class, unlike the hard-boiled ones, which got down and dirty in the gutters of society. This was a time when publishing would create book series based upon crime characters or genres. Sometimes it would come from the specific pulp magazines. This is where The Shadow was born, as well as an early crime book series, Crime Club. One of the earliest crime series on radio was called Crime Club and based on the literary series produced by Doubleday. Its sponsor was Eno Fruit Salts, a digestive aid, and was publicized as the Eno Crime Club, debuting in 1931. It was a 5-a-week, 15-minute series on the Columbia Network, based upon the works of fiction appearing in the Doubleday series. In 1933, the series concept was moved by Eno to the NBC network under a new title, Eno Crime Clues. It became what was referred to as the Manhunter series, starring a detective character named Spencer Dean. Dean was the creation of a scripter who also occasionally wrote for the pulps, Stuart Sterling, a pseudonym for writer Prentice Winchell. Sterling's radio shows included, besides Eno Crime Clues, The Adventures of Bill Lance, another mostly lost audio series. Spencer Dean was primarily a detective to the elite, who, along with his sidekick Dan Cassidy, is heard in this podcast working on the death of an acquaintance killed while bobsledding at Lake Placid. Stuart Sterling, as author, created several fictional detectives published in book form, including Gil Vine and a fireman cum detective known in the series as Fire Marshal Pedley. The books can be found through places such as Abe Books Online if interested. On the Eno Crime Clues, Sterling himself claimed his characters were based upon real people he had known. Dan Cassidy, he says, was based upon a hard-boiled sergeant policeman in the North End precinct of Boston. Spencer Dean was based upon two people, a Pinkerton man and a New York police inspector. I must warn you up front, if you haven't heard any or only a few of the early radio crime series, there are quiet periods, sometimes slower plots, minimal or no musical bridges, and the quality of the recordings extant are not the best. I tried to clean these two up as best I could, so I recommend headphones or higher volume once the program begins. This particular episode is two half-hour shows called The 32 Caliber Kiss, a great pulpish title from 1934. I am presenting it as an example of some of the earliest detective serials appearing on radio, and I hope you can get into the storyline. It is a good example of radio detective serials as they began to move into the likes of Nick Carter and The Shadow without the mysticism of that series. The two episodes are back-to-back, so you can hear the complete adventure.
My life revolved about him. Lord knows I'm just no good without him. My castles have crumbled, but I am his body and soul.
Eno Time, please. Sent to you by the makers of Eno Effervescent Soft.
And now, members of the Eno Crime Club, we invite you once more to accompany Spencer Dean, the Manhunter, on the thrilling adventure, The 32 Caliber Kiss. All the clues necessary to a solution of this mystery drama by Stuart Sterling are given in tonight's episode. See if you can follow the threads of evidence leading to the criminal as Spencer Dean picks them up. The trail tonight leads us to the famous Mountain Sporting Club of fashionable Lake Placid.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Beautiful.
See the shadows of those pine trees in the moonlight. And that group of skaters on the lake, like dancing marionettes.
I wasn't thinking of the skaters or the moonlight.
And I wasn't fishing for compliments, Jean.
I know you weren't. But when it comes to moonlight...
It's getting you, Jean. I could have brought you out here under the moonlight before.
You should have brought me. I've been trying to get you out here ever since dinner.
And now that you have me here?
Well, it's something I'd like to tell you.
Now, Jean, don't be mysterious. I'm not so wrapped up in the beauties of Lake Placid that I'm not anxious to hear it.
It's nothing very startling. You've heard it before.
I'd like to hear it. Tell me again.
With the greatest of pleasure.
Jean.
I...
Oh, Jean Roy.
Hang it all, that Cartwright calling.
Better go and see what he wants here.
But I was just beginning to tell you.
You have plenty of time to tell me, Jean.
And you?
I'll always be ready to listen.
I'll be back in just a minute.
Oh, Jean. Well, hello, Bruce. What is it?
I'd like to see you a minute before we go over to the boss bedroom.
Surely. Let's wait on the veranda
here. The girls will be here in a few minutes. That's what I want to talk to you about. The girl? Not the girl. Just one of them. My girl.
Eunice?
What?
What's on your mind, old man?
Plenty, Moyes. What are you doing over at the ski jump this afternoon?
Talking to Eunice?
Now, get this, Moyes. Eunice and I have been married day after tomorrow. And I don't fancy her running around with you, either before or after the wedding.
Aren't you a little touchy?
Maybe I am. It's my business, Moyes.
Yes? Well, it's my business if I feel like talking to her.
You know what I mean. You knew Eunice before I did.
Yes?
You were fond of her. You proposed to her.
Yes?
She turned you down.
Send you down cold.
Bruce, you're carrying this too far, I warn you.
So you thought you'd try and marry into the rent
for a million?
By way of her sister Harriet.
You're a liar.
Why, you go. Get up. Stand on your feet, and I'll give you some more. You dirty. Nothing, Harriet. We're just fooling.
Doesn't look like fooling to me. Are you hurt?
No. I'm all right.
You've been fighting.
Oh, no. We weren't fighting. Were we, Bruce?
No. We were just scuffing, Harriet. I slipped and fell, that's all. Where's Newman?
He'll be along in a minute.
I think I'll see if I can find him.
All right, Bruce. Dean, what happened? What's wrong, dear?
Nothing.
Angry about something?
Well, I'm not angry with you, any.
Hello, darling. Ready for the bobsled rock party?
All set, you'll be good.
I'll tell you what. Let's take the big dive.
Ah, but we don't take the big dive until day after tomorrow, honey.
There's not as much risk in getting married as there is in this bobsled run. I'm scared to death, aren't you, Dean?
Why, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's a thrill, but safe enough.
Bobsledding in the moonlight. Oh, that's my idea of sport. Come on, folks.
Somehow I'm still afraid. I have a terrible feeling.
Oh, don't be silly, Harriet. I've driven over this run a dozen times. It's about as exciting as a subway ride, only a little faster.
Well, I bought this winter sports costume especially for bobsledding, and I'm going to use it if I die for it.
It's a very cute outfit, Eunice.
Thank you.
You won't need that muff. You'll need both hands to hang on.
Oh, I can hang on to you all right, Bruce, darling. With or without a muff.
I'll say you can. Come on, let's get moving.
Oh, my. I wish I didn't have this dreadful feeling that something awful was going to happen.
There is nothing to be afraid of, Harriet. It's like your first trip in an airplane.
Great sport, eh, Danny? Boy, that's speed for you. Say, what are these bobsled hit, Bruce?
Oh, about 75 miles an hour on the straightaway. They slow up the turns, of course.
Boy, I'm sure glad I came up with you, Spence. You know, I'd heard a lot about late, but
I thought you'd like it. Let's watch you at the curve for a minute. And go up and take a shot at it herself, huh?
Well, I'll hang on, Spence. You handle that steering wheel. Say, that one skidded right up here to the top of the bank.
He was taking it wire, that's all. That's a little extra kick for the girl. Well, it'll be a kick for me, too, all right.
What happens if you go over one of these banks?
Well, you spill, that's all.
Oh, yeah? Wouldn't that be lovely?
Say, what?
Watch this one, Tom. Look at that driver. He looks as if he were asleep. Well, say, he's only got one hand on the wheel.
They're coming high up the bank.
Watch out. They're coming over. They're over.
That was a bad smash. Come on, Daddy. They need help. Say, look at that girl, French. The one against the tree. She's hurt.
Lucky she's killed.
Still alive. Are you all right, nurse? Say, she's faint.
Rub some snow on her face, Daddy. That'll bring her to. I'll go look after the others. You've had anywhere?
No, I'm all right, I guess. How about the girls?
Give me a hand, will you? Help me drag her out of the ditch.
Right.
Grab her, please, Winnie.
Good Lord. It's you, Miss.
Easy, easy. She's thrown against the stump here.
She's hurt. She's bleeding.
I don't think it's any more than a scratch. She's all right. She's opening her eyes.
Oh, dear. What is this?
You hit a tree, young lady. You're very lucky.
Can you stand up, Eunice?
Oh, I'm just a little shaky.
Yes, of course. Here, let me help you.
No.
Fine. Don't think there are any broken bones.
No. I'm all right.
Where's Harry?
Back up the hill. My friend's with her.
Oh,
steady now, young lady. Steady.
Never mind me. Please. Understood me. Yes, I... Oh. Where's Luke?
Oh, there he is. Can that rock?
Come on. Let's see if you can.
Oh.
Must be by the looks of him.
Oh, Bruce. Bruce.
Careful, careful.
What?
He's unconscious. He's pretty badly hurt.
Well, he cut his head on that rock. See? The snow's all bloody.
Yes, but why? He couldn't have bled so much.
Bruce. Bruce, darling.
Take care for a minute, will you? Keep her away.
Easy now, Eunice. Easy. You can't do anything.
Bruce, don't let me go, Dean. Let me go.
Steady, Eunice. Hysterics won't help us any now.
Help me lift her up, will you?
Please, Eunice.
Kissing him won't bring him back to life, young lady. Yes?
Oh, no. No. Oh, no, he can't be. Oh, we'd have been married. He can't be dead. Oh, Bruce.
You only see it.
Oh, Bruce,
get a grip on
I think
it.
I'm going to go.
Done for him?
I'm sure of more than that.
What do you mean?
What do you think, Susan?
He's here on that rock.
He was dead before he ever hit the rock.
I don't understand.
Look here. I need sweater here. Under the shoulder, blood.
Blood?
More than blood. You see this bullet, huh?
He was shot?
Yes. Murdered.
Back so soon, Sheriff?
Well, what'd you find?
Well, this case has got me plumb flambergasted, gentlemen. Now, here's one of the richest young men in the state, up here at Lake Placid for a vacation with a girl he intended to marry.
They were going to be married tomorrow. What do you think of that for a tough spring?
Hold on, Danny. Let the sheriff do the talking.
Yeah. Well, then he runs a bobsled off the edge of a deep curve, nearly breaks the necks of his three passengers, and when we pick him up, we find he's been killed by a 32 caliber bullet.
Find anything in the way of footprints near the bobsled run?
And that's what's burning me up. The only footprints found in 100 yards on either side of the run, sounds clear, but,
Yes? Yeah. Footprints were they?
Those made by you, Mr. Dean, and Mr. Cassidy.
Their name. Are we suspected of the murder, Sheriff?
No. Your reputation clears you from anything of that sort, Mr. Dean, and you too, Mr. Cassidy.
But I don't get it. Now, if there were no footprints on either side of the bobsled run, how could anyone have come near enough to Cartwright to kill him?
And that's one of the things that I don't understand.
Well, I think I can explain that. But there are several other things I'm not quite clear about.
You mean what happened to the gun?
For one thing, yes. Now, your men made a thorough search, Sheriff?
Yes, sir. And absolutely no trace of the gun.
I thought there wouldn't be.
The curious fact that does puzzle me the most is...
What, Ben?
Now, Danny, do you remember how Cartwright looked when we first saw him coming down the straightaway?
Well, I don't remember noticing.
Exactly. You couldn't remember. We couldn't see his face. And one of his hands had dropped from the steering wheel.
That's right. His head was bent very low, almost as if he were asleep.
Oh, you're wasting time, gentlemen. Of what difference does it make how he looked before the action? Couldn't have been asleep, so why worry about that? What we need to know is who killed him after the bobsled jumped the bank.
I don't think anyone did, Sheriff.
You don't think... What?
How that's meant?
I don't think anyone killed him after the bobsled jumped the bank. I think he'd been dead for several seconds by that time.
You mean he was dead while he was driving the bobsled?
Yes.
That's a crazy idea. Why the sled would have jumped the chute?
No, not necessarily. You realize that run of the bank so carefully that a properly weighted bobsled will follow every curve from start to finish without a driver and still stay in the chute?
I heard you talk about that. By the Lord, Harry, I can't believe it.
He'd been killed sometime before we caught sight of him.
Precisely. He might have been killed a half mile above the curve where it still occurred.
Just imagine that. A dead man driving one of them bobsleds 70 miles an hour with three people right behind him.
Yes, and don't forget, his sweetheart was holding on to him tightly, so he wouldn't have slumped over. She probably wouldn't have noticed anything.
Hey, George, let's get these people in here and see what they've got to say. Who do we stop?
I'd like to ask Miss Harriet a question or two. Suppose we have our info.
Good idea. I'll fetch her.
And then Miss Harriet.
Did you send for me, Sheriff?
There you are. Take a seat, young lady. There are some questions we'd like to ask you.
I'll tell you anything I can.
Go ahead, Mr. Dean.
Were you and the dead man on the best of terms, Miss Renfrew?
I can't honestly say we were.
What's that?
You resented his attentions to your sister?
Not exactly that. Bruce Cartwright was a wealthy ne'er-do-well, that's all.
Well, did you ever have any quarrels with him?
No, but somehow we didn't exactly agree.
Yes, perhaps you thought Mr. Cartwright was not the sort of man your sister should marry.
As a matter of fact, I didn't think it was a good match.
I see. Did you ever speak to Mr. Cartwright about it?
Many times.
And to your sister, you know?
Just once.
I dare say she didn't take it kindly.
You may suppose anything you please. Eunice can speak for herself.
Now, if Mr. Cartwright had married your sister, he would have... Well, he'd have had control of a good share of the Renfrew fortune, would he, not?
I suppose so. That wouldn't have made any difference.
You don't seem to feel very badly about this affair.
I do, Joe. For you, Mr. Pick.
But insofar as you yourself are concerned, you're not sorry to have him, well, out of the picture.
No, I'm not. I know a little about Bruce Cartwright's past, and I didn't want my sister to have anything to do with his sister. I never liked him while he was alive, and I'm not going to say anything good about him now that he's dead.
Do you realize that you're putting yourself somewhat under suspicion?
Suspicion? You mean you think I killed him?
Yes, certainly your attitude might indicate a motive.
Oh. Oh, that's too awful. Too horrible. No. No. You can't do that. You can't do it. You can't do it. Oh.
I think we better try another tax, don't you, Mr. Dean?
Yeah, she's rather upset. Let's have Eunice in.
We need Miss Eunice Renfrew.
I hope he's not going to didn't be very long.
Just a few questions, Miss Renfrew. I know you're feeling very much upset.
Really, if I would have said anything.
Now, there. Oh, no tears now, miss. We'll get this over just as soon as possible. Sit down, miss.
What is it you want to know?
Well, in the first place, what? Supposing you ask the question, Mr. Dean, you're more used to this murder business than I am.
Miss Renfrew, did Mr. Cartwright have any enemies who might have threatened his life?
None that I know.
He came up from New York with you and your sister?
Yes. So, who of us? Mr. Moyes is a member of our home.
Oh. You were engaged to Mr. Cartwright?
Yes. We're going to be married tomorrow.
Yes, I know. Now, how long have you known Mr. Cartwright?
A good many years.
Did anyone object to your marriage? Any of your relatives? Or friends?
Yes. Well, to answer that question,
no. This is not a court, Miss Renfrew. But I think you'd be very well advised if you were quite frank with us. Now, there was someone who, let's say, didn't like the idea of your marriage.
No.
Someone in the family?
No.
A former admirer, possibly?
No.
Now, surely you want to help us find your fiancé's murderer, Miss Renfrew?
Oh, you wouldn't.
You mean Mr. Moyes?
Oh, no. No, I'm sure it wasn't.
Where were you sitting on the bobsled, Miss Renfrew?
Don't keep driving. I sat behind him. Hadn't been yet. Did you?
Just four of them.
There was no intimation of any trouble before you started on the bobsled ride?
No, none, never.
I see. And each time you came to a curb, I presume you were all holiday.
Oh, yes. Of course. It was very exciting.
Now, about 100 yards above the curve where the bobsled went over the bank, there's another curve.
Yes.
Do you remember hearing Mr. Cartwright shout as you rounded that curve?
Oh, yes, he called us over his shoulder.
What did he say?
Something like, we must be making a good standing now.
Then he was surely alive when the bobsled first came into view, Dan.
You mean he was killed while we were watching him steer the sled down that slope?
Exactly.
Yeah, but I tell you, my boys couldn't find any footprints within 100 yards of the chute on either side anywhere near there.
And a .32 caliber bullet.
That means a revolver or an automatic. It couldn't have been a rifle, Spence.
Right, Dan. That limits the possible suspect to...
I'd say to the three who was riding on the bobsled.
It looks that way. Now, Miss Renfrew,
Hello. Thank you. Hey, wait a minute. I'll get some water.
Well, I guess we better not question her anymore. No, gentlemen.
No, no. I'll carry her to the next room. There's a cop there. We can put her on that.
This case gets more balled up every minute. So what do we do now?
I'd like to ask Mr. Gene Morris a few questions. Let's have him in.
Bring in Mr. Morris. Good day, gentlemen. I think this is an outrage.
Murder, an outrage? I'm afraid it's much more serious than that, Mr. Morris.
Have a chair, Mr. Morris.
Mr. Morris, you were a good friend of the dead man.
Well, yes. Quite good friends.
Know each other for some time?
Several years.
Never had any quarrels, any arguments, anything of that sort?
See here. I don't quite understand what you're driving at.
It's necessary that you understand, Mr. Moyes. We'll ask him a question. You just attend to the answers.
Well, all right. Am I under arrest?
Nope. Nobody's under arrest. Yes.
But everybody's under suspicion, Mr. Moyes.
Well, if you imagine that I killed Bruce, you're very
I'm not imagining anything, Mr. Moyes. We're merely trying to get down to facts. Now, did you ever quarrel with Bruce Cartwright?
Yes. In fact, we had a little disagreement last night.
Oh, really? What about?
All this stupid.
Well, suppose you tell us, matter of fact.
Well, he was absurdly jealous. Just because Eunice and I were out for a walk yesterday morning, he thought I was...
Mm-hmm.
You're engaged to Miss Harriet Renfrew, uncle.
Practically.
Why did Mr. Cartwright object to your seeing your fiancée's sister?
Well, you see, I knew Eunice pretty well, even before I became friendly with Harriet.
No, that puts a different light onto the matter.
I don't see that it does.
You had words about the matter of Miss Cartwright?
Yes.
Nothing more than words?
Levi struck him.
We believe you struck him.
Well, did you? Oh, I knocked him down. I'm glad I did. I'd do it again under the same circumstances.
By the way, have you a gun, Mr. Moist?
Yes, of course.
What type of gun?
Automatic.
What caliber?
32.
Bring it up here, will you?
Yes.
Where's it now?
Suitcase, I suppose. I haven't looked.
Fired it recently?
No, not for months. But I always keep it with me. I have a permit for it, naturally.
Yes, of course, naturally. Sheriff, I wonder if you'd be good enough to get that gun to Mr. Moist's suitcase. I'd rather like to have a look at it.
Wait a minute. You don't think I killed Cartwright, do you? I may have knocked him down, but I certainly didn't kill him. Murder isn't in my line.
We are not accusing Mr. Morris. We're merely investigating. You get the gun, please, Sheriff. You, but I will. Now, Mr. Morris, this case simmers down to this. Bruce Cartwright was shot. He was killed with a .32 caliber bullet. And all the evidence seems to indicate that he was shot by someone on the bobsled.
But that means that... How the devil?
That leaves just three of you. Eunice, her sister Harriet, and...
And me.
There are certainly some points concerning your connection with the case that require clearing up.
For instance?
Why was Cartwright jealous of your attention to Eunice?
I told you. Eunice and I were pretty thick at one time.
Well, why did you suddenly shift your attention from Eunice to her elder sister?
Well, that's a personal matter, and I prefer not to discuss it.
It's entirely up to you. Possibly you'd rather discuss it in court.
I won't discuss it in court or anywhere else.
That gun ain't in your suitcase at all, Mr. Moist.
Oh, it must be.
Well, take. It's furthermore, I searched the room and sent nowhere in the room.
Well, I left it there.
When did you say it last?
Last night, before the...
Murder?
Yes.
Who else knew you had the gun?
No one that I know of. Look here. If you're trying to pin this thing on me...
We're trying to pin it on the one who did the killing.
Well, I'm not going to do any more talking.
You mean you refuse to answer any more questions?
That's exactly what I mean. I want to talk to my lawyer before I answer any more questions.
Well, that's quite all right, Mr. Moyne. Suppose you go and call him up. You won't mind having one of Sheriff Hook's deputies with you, I'm sure.
Of course not. Don't worry. I shan't run away.
But I'm quite sure you won't. All right, Sheriff. Mr. Morris doesn't want to assist us anymore. Suppose we talk to Miss Harriet Renfrew again.
Okay. All right. Stick with Mr. Morris while he makes the phone call, will you? Thanks. Oh, and say, boys, ask Miss Harriet Renfrew to step in, will you? Hey, Sheriff. What is it? He's gone. What do you mean? He's not here. He's disappeared.
Disappeared. That certainly complicates matters.
I'll say it does. I can't make any sense out of this case anyway.
Well, gentlemen, that's a fine how to do.
Find her. Find her very fast, Sheriff.
You bet I will. I'll have the boys right after that.
Danny, thing looks bad.
Yeah. Well, what do you want me to do?
Wait a minute. Let me think. I've got it. Danny, you go up to Harriet's room. Stay there. Don't let anybody in.
What's that scream? Oh, come on. Come on, it came from the next room.
Eunice. Oh,
she's hot. But there's no one here.
Window, Danny. Look out the window. Miss Renfrew, you hurt.
Oh, my shoulder. Oh, I never thought she...
There's nobody in sight, Prince.
What's the trouble? Who screamed?
Miss Renfrew has been shot.
Oh, it hurts terribly.
Two shots. Yes, two. Both in the left shoulder.
Did you see who it was, miss?
It was a woman.
Did you recognize her?
Oh, no. She was outside in the dark. She took the gun through that open window.
See, there's a million footprints out here, Spence. Anyone could have reached the window from the ground easily enough.
Did you see the gun clearly?
Yes. One of those silly black things.
Automatic. We heard no sound of a shot.
Oh, there's a long tube in the barrel.
Oh, a silencer, eh, miss?
Yes, sir. All it made was a little plop.
Now, quiet. You'll be all right, my dear. Call the doctor, Sheriff.
I'll have him here in a minute.
Dan, we've got to change our tactics. Now, you stay with Eunice. Don't let her out of your sight, you understand?
Sure, I get you, Spence. Keep an eye on her.
Oh, keep both eyes on her. And watch out for yourself, Danny. Whoever shot her might try for you.
Don't worry, Spence. I won't let anybody get near her.
Or near you, Dan. We're getting too close to this murderer for comfort.
Yeah. Too close for the murderer's comfort.
For ours, I meant. Eno Crime Club. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you the second episode of the 32 caliber Kiss featuring Spencer Dean Manhunter. And now, members of the Eno Crime Club, you're invited to accompany Spencer Dean, the Manhunter, in the concluding episode of the 32 caliber Kiss. Did you solve the murder of Bruce Cartwright? If you did, follow Spencer Dean as he unravels the second half of this mystery thriller by Stuart Sterling to see if you were right. Even if you didn't hear last night's episode, you can still obtain all the essential clues to the mystery by listening to tonight's exciting drama. We pick up the trail this evening at the famous Mountain Sporting Club at Lake Placid. A blustering wind rages at the windows of the suite shared by the Manhunter and his partner, Dan Cassidy.
Wow. Listen to that wind. Gonna be a tough night outside, Spence.
Yeah, it sounds like it, Danny. It'll be even tougher inside.
Hey, have you got a lead to this killer?
More than a lead, Danny. How was the patient when you left her?
Eunice? Oh, she's all right. Those two bullets just picked her on the shoulder. Hurt plenty, but nothing serious. She's sleeping. The doctor gave her a bromide.
You tell the nurse to be on the guard?
Don't worry about that nurse. Say she's so scared that she'd go right through the window if anyone hollered boo.
Oh, then she heard that Eunice was shot by someone outside the window, eh?
Yeah. Eunice told her all about it. So naturally, the nurse is afraid someone will wing her by mistake. As far as I'm concerned, everything connected with this case is a mistake.
Deadly mistake, yeah.
Even the shooting of Eunice after Cartwright was killed, that was as cuckoo as the rest of it.
Yeah, not so sure of that, Danny. When you knew Eunice was shot, the case started to clear up a bit.
Oh, I don't get it, Spence. Here's two couples come up to Lake Placid to celebrate Miss Eunice Renfrew's coming marriage to Bruce Cartwright. And 2 days before the wedding, he's bumped off.
Curiously inappropriate time.
Time and place. Both curious. Did you ever hear of anyone being murdered while he was driving a bobsled 70 miles an hour?
No, Danny, it was extraordinary. Don't forget, there's an extraordinarily keen mind behind all these shootings.
Even if there were no footprints on either side of the bobsled chute, and the autopsy showed that Cartwright had only been dead a few minutes. He was alive at the time that bobsled was 100 yards above us. Now that proves
that one of the three on the bobsled was the murderer. Yes, there's no doubt of that.
Well, of the three, Miss Eunice, her sister Harriet, and this guy Moise. I think it's pretty obvious.
Guesswork or headwork, Danny? Which is it now?
Well, I don't see much chance for headwork here.
No?
No. Harriet skipped out. Would she do that unless she was guilty?
What about a motive, Danny?
Well, maybe jealousy. Maybe money. Perhaps she didn't want anyone to influence her sister Eunice's share of the Renfrew estate.
That's pretty far-fetched, Danny. Furthermore, if Harriet had any reason to kill Cartwright, why would she want to shoot her own sister?
Well, oh, I can't figure that out. Well, if it wasn't Harriet, it's a cinch it couldn't be Eunice. Whoever killed Cartwright shot Eunice afterwards. Those 32 caliber bullets prove that.
You know, I've an idea that when a ballistic expert goes to work on those bullets, he'll discover something even more important than that.
Well, you mean about that gun? Well, that's all clear enough.
Moise had an automatic. He kept it in his suitcase. He said it was there.
Yes? All very simple. When Sheriff Hook searched his room, the gun was missing. It hasn't been located since. There's no proof the bullets came from that gun. Merely supposition.
Oh, yes, Daniel. Clear enough.
Well, maybe Harriet pinched the gun from Moise's suitcase.
Maybe.
Maybe he even loaned it to her.
Maybe.
Or maybe...
Too many maybes. All pointing to Moise.
Well, he sure had a motive. He used to play around with Eunice, and then she gave him the air and became engaged to Cartwright.
Well, that's conceivable. He might have been sore about that.
And they quarreled, too. He told us about that.
Ah, but there's something that cuts Moise right out of the picture as the killer.
What's that?
Oh, their positions on that bobsled.
Yes. Now, let's see. The murdered man steering. Then Eunice, his fiancée. Then Harriet, her sister. And last, Jean Moise, his brakeman.
Right. Now, will you tell me how Moise could have reached around and shot that guy Cartwright with those two girls in between? One of the girls would certainly have seen him do it.
Yes, I've heard the shot, possibly.
Oh, well, that's easy. He used a silencer on his automatic.
Yes, and there's something peculiar about that.
I'll say there is.
What occurs to you?
Well, simply this, Spence. If Moise shot Cartwright, then someone else plugged Eunice. They must have. Because one of the sheriff's boys was with Moise at the telephone when Eunice was shot.
Yes, I've thought of that.
And also, Eunice says she saw the person that shot her. She admits it was a woman. But naturally, she doesn't want to incriminate her sister. So she says she couldn't identify
it. Yet she saw the gun clearly.
Sure, and she says it was an automatic with a silencer.
Yes, that's the odd part of it, I...
Down on the floor. Down there. Somebody took a shot at us. Wait. I'll put the light on.
Yes, somebody was trying to put our lights out, all right. Come on.
I'm right with you, boy. You better have your gun ready.
What was that breaking glass?
Well, someone tried to put Cassidy and me out of the picture.
Yes.
Deputy?
And there's somebody over there by the glue.
Hey, that's right. There's somebody moving in the shadows of those trees. Come on, Spence, let's go get him.
Steady. But out in the open, bright moonlight.
What of it?
Whoever tried to put us out of the way will be in the shadows.
That's right. He might try to pot us.
Hey, we can't let him get away with that.
I don't think the killer will get away so easily.
Look. Look. There he goes. Over there. He's gone around the corner of that shed. I'll go around this side, and you take the other.
Careful now. Don't expose yourself, Danny.
You better give up. We've got you cornered. You can't get away. Drop your gun.
What can you beat that? He didn't stick close to the shed at all.
Look, there he is. After him, Dana.
Well, I'll try to wing him.
You missed him. He's in a grove somewhere. Well, let's go in after him.
Don't shoot again unless you have to.
Well, I'm not going to let him get away again.
Hey there, you! Stop! Stop! We can see you now. Better drop it.
See me? I should hope the thunder you could. Is that you shooting at me?
Sheriff! What are you doing in that grove?
What was I doing? Ducking bullets and trying to locate you.
Yeah? Well, somebody took a shot at us back there in the clubhouse. We chased them out here.
Someone took a shot at you? I didn't hear anything except the shooting a minute ago when you missed me.
The killer used a silencer.
Yeah. The same one that killed Cartwright, I tell you.
Sure. Say, you know, it's a good thing you spoke up just then. I might have plugged you.
You nearly did, Mr. Cassidy. Well, there's no chance of finding anyone in here.
Yes, I think you're right.
Great. I almost forgot why I was looking for you. All this shooting going on.
What's on your mind, Sheriff? Did you find Harriet?
No, we ain't found Harriet, but we did find this.
A letter?
It's more than a letter. It's a
Well, here, you better read it, Mr. Dean. I tell Ada it was meant for you.
Hey, Danny, flash your light over here, will you?
Right.
Addressed to the manhunter from the Mountain Sporting Club, Lake Placid. Where'd you find it, Sheriff?
Well, now, that's what speaks me. One of the boys just brought it in from the back porch of the clubhouse. It was lying right onto the doormat.
If it hadn't been there long, the wind would have blown it away.
Huh? Well, there was a good reason why it couldn't blow away. These bullets was used to weigh down the envelope. Look, bullets.
And all caliber 32.
Well, you
read it, Sheriff?
Yeah. I figured it was important enough, and I was right. But you better read it yourself. It's in a woman's handwriting.
Yes, from Harriet. Mr. Dean, I can't stand it any longer. This is the only way out. Don't look for the murderer anymore. I did it. I shot him with Jean's automatic. I guess the rush of wind on the bobsled smothered the sound. You see, Bruce and Jean quarreled, and Bruce meant to get even. I couldn't let him do that. I care too much for Jean. Besides, Bruce only wanted to marry Eunice for her money anyway. So don't search anymore, and don't look for me. I'm going away. Nobody will see me for a long time. At least until spring. And please tell Jean I'm not afraid. Honestly, I'm not. Tell him, too, that I loved him more than anything in this world. Signed, Harriet Renfrew.
So it was, Harry. I told you, Spence.
Wait. Sheriff, when did you find this?
Only 2-3 minutes ago.
It may have been there, Lord knows how long before you found it.
And what of it? She's confessed. That ends the case, don't it? All we got to do is to catch her.
Oh, the case hasn't ended. It's just beginning.
Well, what the...
No time for explanations. Now, listen. The lake's pretty free from snow now, isn't it?
Hardly any snow on it at all.
Yes, and get your men down there fast.
Well, what in thunder are you driving at?
I get it, Spence. That business about not seeing her until spring.
Right, Danny. She meant until the ice on the lake melted.
You mean she's going to...
Exactly. Drowned herself.
Good Lord. Hey, boys.
Search every foot of that lake and work fast.
If she's on the lake, we'll get her.
Get her alive, Sheriff. Not dead. Come on, Danny. Let's get back to the clubhouse. Hey, Spence. What did you mean about the case not being ended?
Shove your brains around a bit, Danny, will you? How about this letter?
Well, how about it?
Doesn't it strike you as rather peculiar that while she confessed to killing Cartwright, she didn't say anything about having shot Eunice?
Holy mother.
And that she doesn't want us to search anymore? Don't look for the murderer anymore. Don't search anymore.
Oh, trying to take the blame on herself, you think, huh?
Trying to, why, Danny, the whole thing cries out fake. Don't you notice anything else about it?
Oh, about Jean. She felt all broken up when she wrote that, I guess, huh?
Yes, broken up, but not broken down. She kept her nerve. Danny, it takes nerve to kill yourself in order to conceal...
Well, maybe she suspects who did kill Cartwright. Well, what makes you think...
Common sense, Danny. His confession is false, but if she didn't shoot Bruce, why does she want to kill herself?
I see it. To cover the real killer.
Exactly. Harriet Renfrew knows who killed Cartwright.
And would rather kick in herself than let anybody know.
Right. Where's Moyer now?
He's upstairs in his room. He's got one of the deputies with him.
All right. Now, Danny, we've got to work fast. Come on. Upstairs, Danny.
Right.
Wait a second.
That isn't Moise's room. But this belongs to one of the girls.
I know this is Harriet's room. Come on. Now, let's have a look around.
What in the world do you expect to find in her room?
A muff, possibly.
A muff? Well, I don't see...
I know you don't. You will, though. Look through that wastebasket, Danny.
Uh-huh.
Nothing in here. Nothing in the closet either, Dan.
Say, here's some pieces of cloth.
That's them. Ray satin. Now, I wonder...
And they're all torn up. That's funny. There are no gray dresses here.
No, I don't think these bits of satin came from a dress.
Well, anyway, these scraps of silk can't give us a lead to the murderer. That's a cinch.
Can't they? I should say they can. In fact, they've done just that.
For Pete's sake, Spence, Cartwright wasn't strangled to death with a piece of silk cloth, and Eunice wasn't shot in the shoulder by a bolt of silk.
How do you figure these bits of satin have anything to do with it?
Let's show them to Moyes. See if he can make anything out of them. Come on.
Who is it?
We'd like to see Moyes a minute.
Oh, come on in, Mr. Dean. Hello, Mr. Cassidy.
I wonder if we could talk to Moyes a moment, Deputy.
Sure, go right ahead.
I wonder if you'd wait outside.
Oh, sure.
Well, I told you, gentlemen, I wouldn't talk anymore, and I won't either.
We know that. We thought you might like to see this.
This is where you sat in? Well, what about it?
Ever seen it before?
Never. What's the idea? Supposed to have seen it?
Not at all. We merely wondered whether you knew anything about it.
Where'd you get it?
In Harriet's room.
Harriet's room? Well, why don't you ask her about it?
I haven't found her yet.
I suppose just because she didn't turn up when you wanted to ask her some more of your silly questions that you think she killed Cartwright.
That's not the only reason.
No? What do you mean? You found something?
Yes.
What is it?
A letter.
Letter? What are you driving at, anyway?
Yeah. Read it yourself.
From Harriet.
Well, I guess this makes further questioning of you unnecessary, Moyes.
In the lake, Moyes. We say that move.
Yes, I think it does.
You can't stand there and tell me that Harriet's going to commit suicide.
We're doing everything we can to prevent it.
But she's going to drown herself.
I think she'll try.
Well, the sheriff has his men down in the lake now. They'll stop.
Let me go. Let me look.
Hold on a minute. You can't do anything they're not doing.
It's impossible. She couldn't escape from why. I know her too well.
Well, but you see for yourself.
That letter is a confession, all right.
Suicide would be a confession, wouldn't it? You'll admit that.
That's your fault.
Mine?
Yes, yours. They call you the man hunter. Well, you're not.
No?
No. You're not the man hunter. You're a woman hunter. Hounded her to her death.
No, you see, I didn't kill Bruce Cartwright. Whoever did that is responsible.
All right. Then I'll take the responsibility.
You killed Cartwright?
Yes, I did. Now, find Harriet before it's too late. Find the right fellow. I don't care what happens to me.
I can understand that. Feel just as she did.
For heaven's sake, stop talking and do something. She'll kill herself by the time you get...
The sheriff's men are doing everything that can be done. If Harriet can be found, they'll find her. As for yourself...
Oh, I don't care about myself. Send her to the chair if you want to. Only save her.
Yes, that's just the trouble.
Trouble? Say, doesn't this confession clear up everything?
No, I wouldn't say that. There's too many people anxious to take the blame. First Harriet, and now you, Moyes.
I tell you, I did it. I killed him, not Harriet.
How did you do it?
Shot him with my gun.
Yes, go on.
Well, that's all there is to it. Coming down the run, gaining speed. I reached around the girls and shot him in the back. That's all.
Yes, that leaves several loopholes.
That's all I've got to say.
Where's the gun now?
Why, I threw it away.
Where?
Oh, I threw it in the lake.
Cut a hole in the ice in order to hide it?
Oh, there's a place where the ice is thin. I broke it and threw the gun in.
Well, what about Eunice? Did you shoot her, too?
Did you use a silencer on your automatic, Moyes?
Silencer? Oh, dear.
Where'd you get it?
Oh, I've had it for some time. Friend gave it to me.
These convenient friends. Well, would you mind taking us to the place on the lake where you threw away the gun?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I can find it. Oh, well, all right.
Go downstairs and get our coach. You ready, Danny?
Yeah, sure.
Meet you downstairs, Mike.
All right. I'll be ready.
Say, that's a cockeyed story.
Yes.
I think so.
He couldn't have shot Eunice.
Obviously not. I don't think he shot Cartwright.
Just trying to take the blame to save the girl, huh?
Yes, don't forget the bits of satin.
Say, I can't understand you at all, Spence. Here you've got two people willing to confess to this crime, and you go nuts over a piece of torn cloth.
Down there. The little clump of spruces.
When did you drop the gun in the lake?
Late last night.
Did you come down here by yourself?
Yes. No one saw me.
Very good reason why, Moist. You weren't out of sight of a deputy for 5 minutes. Don't you think you've carried this thing far enough?
There's what?
All this attempt to shoulder the blame for Cartwright's killing.
I tell you, I didn't. Harriet was lying. She simply wanted to clear me.
Yes, and you wanted to clear her. You didn't kill Cartwright, I'm sure of it. But you think Harriet did.
No, I tell you, no. She couldn't.
Well, it may ease your mind to learn that...
Hey, look there in the cold. That's the sheriff.
Come on. They found her.
Look, it's Petter. She's running. They're chasing her.
She's on thin ice there.
Harriet! Harriet! Stop! Stop! The ice will freeze!
Hey, stop that. Be careful.
What's that ice? It's dangerous.
Look for that thin spot.
It's cracking. It's cracking.
Stop! Stop!
It's up. Take care of it.
Now get her, man. Get her.
Quick, before she goes through.
Oh, I like it. Don't go too close.
She's through. Look, Danny.
Those skis.
Over here in the snow?
Take them here. Boy, don't go near that thin ice. We'll get her.
I want the ice, Harriet. I'll get you. Oh. Oh.
Don't let him save me. Go back. Go back. You won't make it.
Hang on. What is that?
I can't. Hold on. Any longer.
Oh, under the ice. Ava, somebody!
Ava! Give them to me. Hey, are you going to crawl over that rotten ice with just those skis?
I'm going to save that girl. Oh, stay with you, fool. Crawl under the ice.
Look out, Spence. Look out, that ice is gone.
Hey, I'm always glad that lion. Don't bother with me. Save her.
I'm carrying her on shore.
Get her neck. We'll have to chop the ice.
Human,
I thought you were in bed.
All right,
now, boys,
hang on.
We got
you.
Where is he?
Right in front. Come on, Eunice, get out here. Got away from us.
Another
way.
I'm
coming.
Oh,
hey, she's gone in the water.
Eunice.
Eunice. Can you reach
her? Yes. Can you make it, Eunice? I'll make it. I can see her now. Oh, Elliot. I've got her.
Here. Grab his feet.
Over here. Here. Take her.
He's lost. Drag them back slowly, men. That ice is still dangerous for Brentford. How did you come out here?
Oh, don't bother with me. Harriet's unconscious. Can you bring her back to life?
Well, we'll try first aid. Yes. Where's her arms, Danny?
Right.
One's dead, can you? She's dead.
One.
Yes. Two. Does she mean so much to you?
Two. She means so much to me. But if she's gone, I'll kill myself.
Heads up, boy. There's been enough killing, there'll be no more. Miss Renfrew, how did you get down here?
I heard the shouting. Sent a nurse out of the room.
Your wounds are bleeding badly.
Is she alive?
One. Oh, don't bother me. She'll be all right. In a minute.
We'd better get you back at the house, Eunice.
Doesn't make much difference about me.
She's coming too.
Me. I don't care.
We're not trying to torture you. I think you've done that to yourself.
Then why do you ask me these questions then? What do you want to know?
Why did you shoot your fiancé?
I hated him. I always hated him. I only accepted him out of spite after I lost him.
You tried hard to hold him.
So hard. So very hard. Only yesterday, at the ski jump, I told him again I'd never love anybody else.
You missed the car, please.
Don't. Oh, it's all right. He must help. Awfully dry. Send me that glass of water, will you, dear? Drinking for you, dear. It's the last thing I ever ask you to do for me.
Danny, there's poison in that glass.
Yes, there is.
Get a doctor, Danny.
You're a little late, manhunter. The doctor won't help. You can't save me now. The poison in that glass works in a few minutes. You'd better let me go on.
Well, perhaps it's better this way, after all.
It is. How did you know? I did it.
First the muff. You see, your sister didn't have one. You did. Made a perfect hiding place for the gun.
Where did you find it?
I never did find it. But Harriet did. She suspected what she'd find, too.
What was that?
The lining was burnt from the shot you fired, so Harriet tore up the lining, destroyed the burnt box, just the rest of pieces.
To save me?
Yes, I think so.
But I thought, if I shot myself, it would throw you off the track.
It might have. You overplayed your hand. You told us you saw the gun. That was an automatic with a silencer on it.
Sounded all right to me.
Well, there must have been a silencer because we didn't hear any shots. But you were hit twice.
That was nerve, don't you think?
It was foolish. You see, Eunice, the silencer can't be used on an automatic for more than one shot.
So you knew I was lying?
Yes. I knew that you hadn't used Jean's gun. I suspect you planted that in Harriet's room and used another.
Maybe it. She must have found it there.
Yes, knowing that you'd tried to put the blame on her, she was ready to kill herself to save you.
Oh, I'm glad she didn't succeed. So glad.
Your plan nearly worked. Harriet helped you by running away. And by writing that confession.
I hadn't counted on that. But if it hadn't been for Jean.
Yes.
I couldn't see Jean taking the blame. Anything but that.
Please.
I'm sorry. I'm more sorry than you'll ever know about all this.
I believe you.
Tell her, won't you?
Yes.
And say goodbye to her. For me.
I will, you.
I'm going now. Jean.
Yes?
Jean.
You can't die like this.
Jean. Kiss me.
All over, Moise.
She's dead?
Yes. I think you'd better go to her sister.
You're right. Can you beat that? She wanted a kissing goodbye.
He's a lucky man. It might have been a .32 caliber kiss instead, Danny.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Radio Detective Story Hour. I'll be back next time with another drama of suspense.